Hello, my name is Dennis van Weeren. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm going to tell you something about a project of mine on which I've been working for quite some time. And it's called... Back to the next slide. Yeah. I'm not a hero with PowerPoint, so I'm more an Amiga guy. Minimig, an Amiga FPGA. Around the end of 2004, the beginning of 2005, I think it was around that time that the Commodore 64 joystick came out. And of course it was a further development of the Commodore 1 by Jerry Ellsworth. And it inspired a lot of people in the Amiga community to discuss about the possibility of doing such a thing for the Amiga. Because if you can put an Commodore 64 inside a joystick, couldn't you put an Amiga inside a joystick? Well, the general consensus around the time was that it was possible, but it was a difficult task. It was, the Amiga is much more complex than a Commodore 64. It is a 16-bit machine, has more complicated custom chips. So yeah, it can be done, but it is a lot of work. Well, I'm an electronics engineer by profession, and if somebody tells you, yeah, it's possible, but it's a lot of work, then that is a challenge. So I decided around that time to give it a go. And fortunately, somebody a couple of years ago gave me such a pile of Amiga books. And with the Amiga books came the three Commodore reference manuals, namely the hardware reference manual, the ROM kernel reference manual, and the includes and autodocs. So I began by just reading the hardware reference manual to see how the Amiga chipset really worked. Because I've owned several Amigas, I even programmed them on a higher operating system level, but I never dug into the hardware to see how it really works. So that was my step, and the more I... At first I just began with a simple chapter, like the bitplane system or the copper system. And at first I didn't really see it, because all is divided into three chips, and you have to see, they can tell you when this register does that register does that, but how does it fit into the whole picture? So after a couple of months I began to see the structure in the Amiga chipset, and I decided that I could probably do it. But to do that I needed an FPGA, and an FPGA stands for Field Programmable Gate Array, and it's just like a big chip with lots of logic gates on it, which you can do anything with. You can make it into a computer or a calculator, everything that is digital. But the wires between the logic gates are not there yet. But you can program the chip to connect the gates in a certain way to perform a certain function. Well, to describe the circuit, you have a so-called hardware description language. And the best known hardware description language is VHDL. So a colleague of mine gave me the VHDL cookbook, which is a free book from the internet. I got to around page 4 and decided that I was never going to like that language. And then I found out about an alternative, and it's called Verilog. And Verilog is also a hardware description language, but it's much more C-like in its structure, or C-like in its structure. And I knew C, so the step to Verilog wasn't too big a step. So I then began starting to learn Verilog. And that went quite well. I made some small circuits, like, well, a running light. That's what everybody starts. It's about the hello world in FPGAs. A simple mouse interface that would take the signals from a PS2 mouse and convert them to digits that I could read on the display. And once I got accustomed to Verilog and working with FPGAs, I started working on the Minimig. But to do that, I had, of course, to have some real hardware to work with. So I bought an FPGA starter kit, which you can see here on the screen. And added a 68,000 processor in it, added to it, because I figured that implementing the Amiga chipset is one thing, but implementing a complete processor is another thing. So I decided it was probably best to start with something stable and known. So I started with a real 68,000. And I made a small board,
with the 68000 on it and some bus buffers to interface to the rest of the FPGA board.
I then figured out that the 68000 I was using was not completely compatible, because this is a 68SEC1000, and it's a static version of the well-known big 68000 in Amiga 500. And on this processor, some instructions are privileged. And yeah, I couldn't do much about it, but I just started because I figured it was not an instruction that was used very much, so I hoped the Amiga wouldn't use it. And I was probably right, because most stuff that I try now doesn't guru on the processor. So this is how I started, just adding using an FPGA board, adding a 68000 to it. The first step was to have the 68000 execute code from the memory. And my first program that I got running was very simple. It would fetch the reset vector and the interrupt of data, the first stack pointer, from the first locations of the ROM. So I wrote a little ROM myself, and then just loop around. And I monitored the address bus so I could see where the processor was stepping to. And by slowing down the clock to only a couple of hertz, so instead of 7 megahertz, it was running at about 5 hertz, I could trace the address bus and see what the processor was doing. Well, once the processor was running, finally, yeah, I could begin working on the Amiga chipset. And what I did was, I started to implement small bits of the Amiga chipset inside the FPGA. And one of the first things I got running was the bitplane system and the copy system, so I could get a stable screen. And what I would then do, I would write small test programs, put it in ROM inside the FPGA, boot the system, and let the ROM test my hardware. So one of the first pictures I got out of it was this. It's just a simple pattern that is written inside the memory. And I could also scroll it, so I could check if the example program from the ROM, the hardware reference manual, were actually running on my system. And you can see some little stickers here. One of the difficult part was to get the sync pulses on the right place, so the screen would shift to the left or shift to the right, but it has to be centered. So what I would do is I would get my real Amiga, hook it up to the monitor, put tapes on where the screen was beginning and ending, then put my own Amiga on it and check if it was on the right place. So I got bit planes approximately right. Well, the next step, once I implemented all the little pieces of the Amiga chipset, it was time to let it run some actual Amiga code. And the first Amiga code that is executed once you switch on an Amiga is the kickstart. But then the real problem started, because so far I've been writing or creating my own hardware, but testing it with my own programs. So I know how the hardware behaves and I know how my programs behave. But the kickstart expects real Amiga hardware. And as it turned out, my own hardware was not completely Amiga compatible. So several weird problems bugged me. And one of the weirdest problems was that the kickstart, during its boot process, sets the second copper pointer. And I don't know if you know, the copper is the coprocessor inside the Amiga. And it's just like a very small processor that has only 3 instructions. And somewhere during the boot process, the copper was pointed to some random memory. So it began to execute random code. And that random code would corrupt the whole boot process and my system would guru. So the power led began to flash. Display wouldn't come up because of other problems. But I saw a flashing light, and normally a flashing LED means trouble in Amiga. So I was really puzzled by that. And finally I figured out that there's actually a feature inside the copper that once the copper accesses some illegal memory area, it will stop. So in my system, it wouldn't stop, and it would just continue executing random code. But in a real Amiga, it would stop doing that. So it probably was an error by the Amiga designers, which was left in because they didn't notice it, because of the way the hardware behaves. Well, once I figured that out, I fixed my copper, and then the system would probably boot up in some sort of a screen like that. It was completely corrupted. So I figured out that my Blitter is also was also not completely right, and that is because the Blitter line mode is very weird. And some features, if you read the reference manual, they would explain all kind of things about the normal Blitter mode, and then they would spend such a paragraph on the line mode. If you want the line, just do that, and it will draw a line. Yeah, it probably does, but it can do other things too in line mode. And I figured that out by using a small program called Blitlab. It was somewhere in Aminet. It was a very old program, and with that program you could you would have a small screen with a picture of a piece of memory, and you could write all the registers and then see what the Blitter does on the real Amiga. So I would try all kind of settings and all kind of weird settings that weren't really documented, and see how the real Blitter behaves, and then make my Blitter behave the same way. So finally I got the Blitter right, and I got the famous hand screen. But really a lot of the Amiga is the ROM kernel reference manuals and the hardware reference manuals are very good, but they don't describe anything, and in some areas they are just plain wrong. And that is really, that was the most difficult part about getting a rough system working. Finding out what is wrong in the hardware reference manual, and then figuring out a way to get to know how it's really working. So that is approximately what went on after I jumped into Kickstart. Well, one of the first results I got, once the system was roughly working, was something like this. This looks like an early boot startup of Kickstart 3.1, and it is, but it's severely corrupted. And this all has to do with Blitter mode that's not right. And you can even see that the mouse pointer has disappeared a bit. That was also a bug in the Blitter, in the Sprite engine. Well, after a few days, that went relatively fast. It was getting better. This looks like a real early starter control, and it's kind of strange that I. This was the first thing I got running. The real Kickstart hand came later, and also because of some nasty bugs in the system. Finally, I got to this screen, running Kickstart 3.1 ROM, and eventually running 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 2.04, and 3.0 and 3.1. Finally, something in the beginning when you're working on a system, nothing works, and then suddenly everything is working. This was the same here. The next problem. Was because I now had a system that could boot the Kickstart ROM, but I couldn't load any software because, as you see on the previous picture, I only had a board with a 68000 processor attached to it, but no means of loading software through a floppy. So I added a second board. This is the board of
the third board. This is the board on the right here.
That board contained a better video interface, as you can see here.
An audio interface, a joystick interface, and a small microcontroller with a
comfort of a multimedia card attached to it that is going to function like a floppy. And the Minimig doesn't have a real floppy controller, but it has a sort of emulated UAE-like floppy controller that loads floppy images like ADF files that you use with the emulator from a MMC card. The floppy controller was also a rather big hurdle to take, because you have to encode the data in the images is a raw image of a real floppy. But to have the Amiga understand it, you have to encode it into a format called MFM format. And if you don't do that right, it won't work. And it took me some weeks to get that to work correctly. But once I had that working, finally, we can play Lemmings. One of the first things I tried to run on the Minimig was Lemmings. And especially because I really liked the intro of the cracked version of Lemmings. And it turned out that the intro did some nasty tricks with the Blitter too. So at first it was running way too slow. It was running completely correctly. but half speed. But finally, I figured that out also how to get the glitter timing more correct. So this is how the development of the MiniMig went. And the next step is going to be, I have now, what you saw, I have a complete prototype consisting of three boards. The next step is to integrate all those boards into a single board and behave like a real Amiga, and that's going to be this board. It's relatively small, it's 12 by 12 centimeters, so it's smaller than a Mac Mini. So you could hack a Mac Mini into an Amiga by ripping out its innards and putting in this once it's finished. This is what I'm currently doing. The board is not ordered yet. I have all the parts bought, including the FPGAs, which was quite difficult to get. And so I hope to finish it as soon as possible. Any questions? Well, I can demonstrate, of course, because I've brought MiniMig with me. The final goal is to make this an Amiga, which works a bit like a game console. So you can put it on your television and switch it on and have hundreds of games within reach. Because the memory cards are quite large, and ADF image is only 880 kilobytes. This flash card is 265 megabytes, so it can hold about 250 floppies. I used to have such diskette trays, but now you can hold them all in a single multimedia card. And the goal is to have a small button called a menu button, which pops off an on-screen display, where you can just select a game with your joystick and press the fire button, and off it goes. And that is already working, only the on-screen display part I haven't implemented yet, because I'm really waiting for my new board. But I have a pseudo display on my laptop. So if I would press the menu button on the MiniMig, I get the insert floppy menu. I press the fire button and I get to the directory contents of the NMC card. Well, I just select Lemming, exit the menu, and the MiniMig will boot. Well, this is the... Don't know if you know this intro, but it was actually the first, when I first got my Amiga 500, this was the first game I ever had, so it's that's why I liked it so much, I guess. You have to exit by pressing the mouse. You can see on the, this is some debug info on the screen. You can see it loading tracks from the ADF image. It's actually a bit faster than a real Amiga. It loads about, 150% speed of a real Amiga. So it's a bit speed loader. Yeah, it's just Lemmings. Are there any questions? Half a megabyte of chip RAM at the moment, no faster or more slow RAM installed. So normally on an expanded Amiga, this intro goes in one piece, but because of the RAM limitations, it will reload. But on the new board, this will be fixed, and I will have more RAM to test more games. Well, now it's asking for disk 2, so you just press the menu button. And you eject the current floppy and insert a new one. Lemons disk 2. And continue. are still bugs in the system. I have still have a problem with my sprite engine, and on some games the sprites just won't show up during an intro or during some portions of the game. I also still having some troubles with displays, because on the Amiga you have to set two registers called a DDF start and DDF stop, which determine where to start fetching data and where to stop fetching data. And I'm doing some weird things there, but that should be easy to solve. So in some games you see the weird horizontal, how do you say it, steep lines going on. But I can show other games if there are some suggestions. Shadow of the Beast.
Shadow of the Beast would be great.
Okay. And reset. Well, it's all cracked games here, but it's easier to get ADF from cracked games than from new games, so you can find them everywhere on the net. Loading a lot of tracks 80. Not completely right. Well, I've been working on the core a little bit. I've made copies of an older core, so maybe I can check that later, but Shadow of the Beast is out of order for the moment, I think. But it normally it runs on the system. I will try it later on to get Shadow of the Beast running. Fire and Ice. James Bond. Lotus. Actually, it's a fully working serial port, so with Lotus you could link between two computers. And it should be actually working, because I only have one mini moment I can test, can't test it. Mainly loaded with games at the moment, the memory card. But it does run workbench applications like DVPaint, SysInfo is something I tested. It boots Workbench 3.1. But yeah, due to the memory limitations, it's not really fun to do any workbench stuff at the moment. But are there any questions about the I can't imagine there are no questions.
We are just done.
Yeah. Well. This is something that runs really well on the Miniweg. Oh, I was breaking. But like I said, there are some problems, and Shadow of the Beast used to be working, but I have been working on the floppy controller a bit, And you saw it was reloading track 80 at an amazing speed. So I probably broke something in the process of working on the core. But I have an old core on my computer, so I can try to run Shadow of the Beast later on. But as we said, and show you some other things. Battle Squadron, yeah. If somebody has an image of Battle Squadron. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, some
demons. Yeah, some demons. I'll show them. Just I want to show sysinfo. Yeah. Yeah, I will show Alpha Omega. Okay. Test on this machine, it turns out it is about as fast as A600, which is no surprise of course, because it's meant to be an A500, A600 machine. But I actually have a faster chip RAM burst than a real Amiga, and at the moment it's emulating real chip RAM speed. But if I flick a switch on the FPGA board, it gets more bandwidth into chip RAM, and it is even faster. We are now 34% faster than a real Amiga 600, and we have more chip speed. And I even get a higher rating in the comment area, now we are talking. But this is something you can't do on a real Amiga, of course, with only half a megabyte of RAM. You can't obtain speeds like this out of chip RAM. But on a Minimech, because you can create your own hardware, you can do such crazy things. Even with the drives. It should be a little bit faster than a real real Amiga. Still testing. Yeah, 25 kilobytes a second. A real Amiga does about 16 kilobytes a second, approximate. I don't know off the top of my head. But I will show you some demos, because it's a... So you set the system. You have to copy. Alpha Omega. Demo to get the speed right, because it depends on the speed of a real Amiga blitter how fast it goes to the whole demo. If your blitter is running faster, then everything will go faster, and at some point the subtitles will go out of sync with the picture. And even here it's not completely right, but it's approximately real Amiga speed. This is all blitter stuff, line mode and the sound is also mostly functional at the moment. There was some discussion on the forum. I'm using a one-bit DA converter, digital to analog converter. And there was some discussion on the Amiga forum if that's good enough for reproducing Amiga sound. But on a real Amiga, you only have 8 bits per channel, so it's not really hi-fi in any sense. And well, as you can hear, with a one-bit digital to analog converter, it sounds well, quite okay. At the moment, I don't have filters implemented, but it can be done in a digital brain very easily. But for debugging and getting things to work, it's not really important. No questions? Yeah? Yeah? No? So at the moment running in normal video mode, just like a normal Amiga. It also has a built-in scan dubber, because scan dubbing is something which is very easy to do once you're inside an FPGA. The only thing it can do is de-interlacing. So it can scan dub an image to 31 kHz, so you can display it on a standard personal computer monitor. But you can't de-interlace or de-flicker interlaced screens. It will always be shimmering. And that's because of memory limitations again. Just stop the demo to show you some other things that are running. Personal start, PPMer, Ray of Hope is also a demo, not completely running correctly. Any requests? Turrican. Okay, which one? One, two, or three? Three? Two. Oh, start with. Again, a trainer. This is a DDF start, DDF stop perk. And it's really a simple bug, but the Amiga really behaves differently when in different screen modes, when in different combinations of settings. So I still have to do some work there. But as you can see, this is running. The shimmering is not normal. I think it has to do with television. Normally it's running fluently. To start. Any more requests, questions, suggestions? Yeah. Well, then I will finish it up for now. I will be sitting there in the back, so if you have any floppies you want to test or demos you want to run or talk to me, I'll be here all today. But that's it. Thank you.